Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. We are midway through September, and in talking to Cherie, who is the headmistress of Angel Coaches, about a show to do, we had a lot of interest in the show I did about writing a few weeks back. So we're going to talk about books and how to get your book out there and blogging and all that kind of stuff today. And I just want to introduce myself for anybody who's just tuning in. This is the Angel Coaches Network, and there's a host of different coaches in this little group we have. We have, you know, of course, psychics. We have mentors for physical fitness, mental, spiritual health. I am also a writer and published author, and we've had a lot of people asking questions, some very specific questions about books, how to get your book out there, and what it should look like when you're sending it in to a publisher. So that is what I'm going to talk about today. My name is Diane Bucci, and welcome to the show. I will talk first about just in general, how to get your thoughts out to the public when you think, oh, I want to write a book, or I have something to say, I have an idea to share. You don't necessarily have to publish a book. You can blog, and that's kind of a good way to start getting your thoughts kind of together. You can start your own blog. You can buy a domain. I think 1&1 Internet actually is a host for some real reasonable domains. I'm not sure the cost anymore, but I think it used to be like $50 or something. You can set up your own domain. You can name it whatever you want, call it Joe's Pizza or whatever you want, and they will tell you if that name is already taken, and you can keep putting in possibilities until you find something that meets what you're wanting. So you can set up a blog on any host that will register your domain name, but they do charge a fee for that. And you can just start blogging. You can design your own website. You can put pictures up. You can get real fancy with all the graphics and moving displays. And you can obviously hire a webmaster to do that for you. But if you're just starting out, I would not recommend putting a lot of money into it. I would just pay the fee to have a host domain and just get started writing and put a picture of yourself up there or some family pictures or scenery pictures or whatever it is that you're wanting to represent, and just start writing some posts that reflect what your ideas are. In fact, I think that's how Pioneer Woman got started. She just started blogging and developed a big following, and suddenly she's kind of got her own little empire with cookbooks and everything else. So, you know, you could start out as a blogger and then start reaching out into other venues. But I would kind of first get an idea of what it is that you're wanting to say, what it is that you're really wanting to present to people, and how you're wanting to present yourself to people before you start designing your blog. And then make your first post kind of a general welcome. This is what I'd like to talk about. You can talk about personal stuff. You can go on a rant like a Jerry Seinfeld about funny things. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is that you have to say, start blogging, and it will force you into writing and getting your thoughts down. And very often I found myself pulling things that I've written down just as a side note. It might have been in a letter or an email to somebody that I had a thought, and I wrote it down, and I kind of pulled it into a book then in later years. So some of your blog posts you may get a lot of hits on if you start developing the following, and you'll see what people are most interested in that you have to say, and you can kind of capitalize on that and expand on those things. So that's how I would start. If you are wanting to write a book, just start blogging if you don't quite know what your book is going to be about. And you can really develop a following because there's a lot of things on the internet that host bloggers. You can go sign up for one of those. If you just search blogging, blog host, it will give you a list of domains that also could host your domain, your blog post. And there's, you know, you can click on those and you'll see 200 different people who write different blogs every day. You can be a blogger or a reporter for The Examiner, which is like an online newspaper, if you will. It's got a lot of current news. It also has a lot of editorial columns. I've done editorial columns for them, and it's basically just putting whatever it is that you'd like to write an article about onto a national website, and that will start developing a following for you. If people like your ideas, they will, reply to you, comment on you, they'll start following you, and that's really a great way to start building your fan base if you're thinking of doing a book later on. That's something that I did not do because blogging was so new when I first started writing a book that I didn't, nobody was using that kind of stuff. So there were some well-known authors who had their own websites and they might post on them once in a while, but it was not like a daily blog. So that's one idea to kind of start you into writing, because I think that's the biggest problem people have is that mental block they've got I want to write a book. I've got all these ideas I want to put down, but they just can't seem to start sitting down, putting pencil to paper or fingers to keyboard or whatever. So if you start in small baby steps with blogs, you can just take one little idea at a time or one opinion on one thing and make a little article about it. One thing I will say, humor always draws people in. So even if you have something that is more of a serious topic, you'll find that you get more followers when you have some humor in it, even if it's just ironic humor or gallows humor. If you've got a little bit of a comedic twist sometimes, you will find that you will get a lot more people interested in what you're writing, because most of us don't like to, open up a newspaper or open up our website and go onto a mail and read depressing things. We want some kind of an uplifting note to it. Obviously, if you're writing editorials or just articles about serious, sad things, you're not going to want to put any humor in there. But I'm just suggesting if you're starting a blog that you try to make something lighthearted and fun out of a little bit of it so that you maintain your reader's interest. But often the humor draws them in, and then the serious note is what they will walk away remembering. Let's see. One of the questions I've gotten is, if I'm writing a book, what do I need to send to a publisher to get them to take a look at it? And for that question, you'd have to go on to every individual publisher's website, because they all ask for different things. There's kind of a general rule of they want an outline, they want the first three chapters, they want, to know where you're going with the book, how it's going to wrap up. So usually if you're sending them some chapters, you might want to also send them the final chapter. If you're not done with it, you don't have to do that, obviously, but just so that they're going to have an idea of where the book is leading to. They want an author bio. That's something that you can easily do without any thought to it, because you're writing about yourself. You're writing about what your experience is. They want to know, why are you qualified to write this book? So, if it's a book on parenting, you say, hey, I'm a parent. If it's a book on being a kid, say, I was a kid. I mean, you don't have to have 15 initials after your name or a degree in anything to write a book. But they want to know, how could they market you as somewhat of an authority on whatever subject you're writing about so that you would seem credible to the buyer. So they'll want an author's bio. And those are the most common things that they will ask for. A bio, an outline, first couple of chapters, or at least three chapters, whether they're beginning, middle, end, whatever, because they want to see your writing style. A lot of them will also ask for another synopsis, somewhat chapter by chapter, a detailed synopsis of every chapter, just kind of like a paragraph of this is what I'm going to talk about in this chapter. Some of them don't want that, but you'll find different publishers want different things. If you're trying to go after a major publisher, that's where you will really need a literary agent or someone to represent you who has connections in the publishing world, because most major publishers will not accept unsolicited manuscripts from people. So you can send out all the query letters you want to Random House or Penguin Books, but you are probably not going to get anything more than a computer-generated response that says, thank you for your query. You know, someone will get back to you if you're interested, and I guarantee you nobody's ever going to look at that. So if you are really trying to go for a major publishing house, you really need to get an agent who works with those houses. You do not have to have an agent, obviously, but if you think you've got the next bestseller and everybody in the country is going to be interested in your book and you want it published from a major publishing house, you're probably going to be working on that for years. It does not come overnight. You're going to be sending out 1,000 query letters at least and trying to get a literary agent. And often the agents ask for the same kind of things that the publishers do because they don't want to just sign anybody unless they know this is a person I can market, this is a book I can market. So they'll also want the same kind of material that the publishing houses want, which is your bio, your synopsis, and outlines and sample chapters. Sometimes if you have the whole book done, they're happy for you to send the whole book, but most of them don't want all of that. They just want a few sample chapters and a synopsis of the book. So that is the next thing. I've also been asked, you know, how print ready does your manuscript have to be? Clearly, it does not have to be ready for the printer. If it is, you can obviously publish it yourself on Amazon or another self-publishing place. But, you know, I think there are some grammatical things that you do need to look at. Certainly have a proofreader. Sometimes I'll look at the same mistake 50 times and never catch it, and then I'll just send it to my mom, who's an awesome proofreader, and she'll pick up every comma that I miss. So if you are wanting to, you know, send it away without a professional proofreader, you obviously don't need somebody to pay, but I would definitely recommend another pair of eyes go on it. It doesn't have to be blocked, you know, on your computer, or if you have an old typewriter or whatever, a word processor. You can set it so that your words are blocked across the page. You can do that because it looks neater, but you don't need to do that when you're sending a manuscript. One thing that you do, I would recommend doing, is making sure that you have some breaks between paragraphs. So just you know, hit that double space bar, you know, to make a little space between each paragraph because it gives the reader's eyes a chance to rest. When you look at a page that's just full of nonstop words, every sentence is one after another, it's almost overwhelming. It makes your eyes tired when you start reading through that. So that's something that I would definitely recommend. It's something really silly and stupid and small, but it makes a difference to me when I get things from people that want me to proofread. When I just glance at the page, I'm eager to read it when there's breaks in the page. When I look at this page that's just completely solid type all across the page, top to bottom, it already makes my eyes tired just looking at it. So that's one thing that's just kind of sounds silly, but if you pick up any book that's published that you like to read, you'll notice paragraphs have this extra little space. It's like a space and a half between each paragraph. So that's something that you know, that's more important to me than indentation. You don't need to indent paragraphs. Some publishers still do. Some don't do that anymore. But make sure you get some breaks in between paragraphs to give the reader's eyes a little bit of rest. Chapters, if you are doing a manuscript, you know, if you are trying to put it into a book format, your new chapters should always start on the right side. So like if you open a book up, if the new chapter, you just finished one, next chapter's coming up, you want that chapter to start on the right side page. So even if you have to leave a blank page in there, sometimes you might have to leave a blank page and a half, that's something that is important if you're really trying to make a fully ready-to-go, print-ready manuscript, as your chapters would need to start on the right-hand side. But for the most part, if you are just submitting something to a publisher, you're not submitting it into a book form. You're just submitting some chapters that is just on a document that you're attaching to an email. Usually, I think most of them are paperless now. Most of the publishing houses and literary agents do not want you to mail that paper thing in. Unless they request it, they'll usually ask you to just attach those sample chapters to an email. So you really don't need to worry about any of the ins and outs of how to get things printed onto a book. So those are a couple questions that I have been asked that were just kind of detailed questions from people who were thinking about either submitting a fully ready book or publishing it themselves. Those are just kind of some helpful hints that you should look at if you're self-publishing it on Amazon, which you can do for relatively little money. So if you have a book that you would like to get out right now, you don't want to mess with trying to find a publisher or trying to find an agent, you can publish it yourself on Amazon, and I would be happy to answer questions for if anybody had them on how to do that, because it's very, very easy. All you have to do is, you know, buy the ISBN number and publish your book yourself, and it will let you, it will give you a template, and you will download your book into that template, and then you need to go back and make sure that your paragraphs are falling where you want them to, and that the chapters are starting on the right side of the book page, and things like that. Then you'll have to go through and make an index or a glossary, or you know, if you want different chapters, you want to list the page numbers for the reader at the beginning of the book, you'll have to go back and reformat, because it's going to fall on different page numbers than you had it in your original manuscript. And I've actually seen some copies of some books that they had made that error, and that's the only reason I'm pointing that out. Apparently, in the author's manuscript, chapter 3 started on page 56, but when they downloaded it onto the template from Amazon, chapter 3 started at page 49, and it started on the left-hand side of the page, and that's just not literally correct. So I'm just throwing that out there. Most of all, what I really wanted to stress is, it's speaking from your heart. I mean, you can talk about phonetics and grammatical errors and all you want, but the most important thing is the ideas that you're trying to get out to your readers. What is it that's in your heart that you're trying to get out? Because when you're speaking about something that you are very passionate about, that comes across, and that passion is contagious, and it will really attract the reader. If you're just saying, I just want to publish a book, and there are people who have done that, just to see their name in print and say that they published a book, it's boring. It's just boring sometimes. What they're talking about, not necessarily their subject material, because any subject material can be interesting if that is something that you are interested in. I mean, things that might interest me wouldn't interest you and vice versa. But I can read a book about a subject that I'm interested in by an author who was not passionate about the subject and be bored to tears and not be able to finish it. Whereas I could pick up a book that I have no interest in at first, but because the writer is so passionate about what they're saying, they immediately pique my curiosity. So I want to read the rest of the book. I want to know what they're saying. I want to know where they're leading with this. And so that's something that is the most important thing, is writing what you're passionate about. And it doesn't matter what it is. It can be writing about a dirty dish rag. If you feel passion for that dirty dish rag, you will attract readers, because that excitement is going to come across in your words. Another thing, speaking of words, I would always recommend using a thesaurus. One of the most mundane tasks to me is proofreading somebody's book that has used the same words over and over again. It's like they have one word to describe fun, or one word to describe excitement, whatever it is. They're using the same words over and over, and I will just go in and I'll change them. I'll just grab my thesaurus and say, okay, I'm tired of reading this word. Other readers are going to be tired of reading this word. So you want to expand your vocabulary. You know, if you're a writer, you need to use a thesaurus and a dictionary. We also have spell check, which, believe it or not, there's people who don't use that, or they'll just ignore it. You know, they'll spell check it and they'll say, no, I know this is the tense of the word that I want, and it's not. Or I know what's happened to me. Sometimes spell check will change a word that was correct to a different word, and that doesn't make sense. So you can't always trust spell check either. You want to make sure you're proofing through everything after you have spell checked it. You need to go back through very carefully and read the words very slowly, and don't just skim through them saying, well, I know what this says, because you'll find 9 times out of 10 there's at least one or two words that spell check changed to something that they thought. It's like the autocorrect on your iPhone. One of my favorite websites is damnyouautocorrect.com. It's hilarious when you start reading the text from people that they've sent to their friends where it's predicted a word and it's changed a word they wrote to say something else. And there's some pretty hilarious ones. So if you ever need a laugh and you're feeling down, get up your computer and go on to damnyouautocorrect.com and you will see a lot of laughter in there. But that's what spell check can do to you. It can change a word like parking to penis. You know, I mean, you see it on people's texts and you think, that's not what I meant. And I remember my daughter said, whoever uses the word ducking, you know, obviously people use swear words sometimes. Why is it always changing it to the word ducking? Is that even a word? I guess it is a word if you're ducking from something that's being thrown at you. But anyway, I'm just saying, make sure that you go back after you've spell checked and read through your words very carefully, because you may find a couple that got changed incorrectly. And so that would be my recommendation with the grammar. One thing I've noticed with recent publishers, they're really trying to save paper. They're trying to make the book as small, as few words as they can often. They will take punctuation out all the time. So, you know, when I was back in school, they always said, wherever you pause to take a breath, that's where you should have a comma. You know, wherever you pause when you're talking, you should put a comma there. Well, if you notice, most publications that you read, there are very few commas now. That's not to say that you want to have run-on sentences, but I would definitely look at that, because a lot of people have kind of gotten into that habit themselves where, well, they don't use a comma in this book, so I'm not going to use a comma when I'm writing. Well, the you know, the editors at the publishing houses know a lot more about you know, how to eliminate a comma than most people do without it looking like a run-on sentence. A lot of us lay people, we do not know how to do that. And I see that a lot with people where they just have no punctuation, and I can't even understand the sentence because they've got three sentences in one with no commas. So I still remember one of my friends had a daughter in college, and she said, I finally learned what to do when I don't know the punctuation. I just put a semicolon after everything. I never get marked wrong when I put a semicolon, because I think the teacher doesn't even know how to use it properly. And I think she was right. A lot of people don't know how to use a semicolon properly. So that's something you might want to look up in Webster's. It will tell you. I think they have all the punctuation rules in there if you don't have an idea about how to use some of these punctuation marks, because clearly, many of us struggle with those. So as far as your grammar is concerned, it does count when you are sending in a manuscript to a publisher. You want to make sure that they are understanding what you wrote and not getting tired of reading run-on sentences, and they'll just set your manuscript aside and say, sorry, not interested. So that's just a few things that I have been asked about, and I thought I would share those with you. But most of all, what I'd like you to take away from today is just sitting down and starting to writing something, whether it's a blog, whether it's a letter to your mom, something that you feel passionate about, that you think you would like to write about, or you think you would like to start a blog about. Just start writing. Nobody even has to read it but you. Start writing, and you'll turn around and look back and go, hey, that's pretty good. You know, I think I like what I said here. So that's the most difficult thing, is just making yourself sit down and begin to write. And I'm just asking everyone to do me a favor, if you listen to this show, and make it a point today to take 5 minutes to either grab a notepad and a pencil or your computer and write something that you are passionate about. So I hope everybody has a great week, and I will talk to you soon. Thank you.